Chapter 38. The roadside bistro was like a desert waterhole to the Trouts, who had been on the go for most of the day. They beat a path to the door of the converted farmhouse and were soon seated in a dining room that overlooked a formal flower garden. Although the stop was motivated by hunger and thirst, it proved to be a stroke of luck. Not only was the food excellent, the bistro's handsome young owner was the equivalent of a Chamber of Commerce information booth. He overheard Paul Angame speaking English, and he came over to their table to introduce himself. His name was Bertrand, Bert for short, and he had been a chef in New York City for a few years before returning to France to open his own place. He was pleased at the chance to talk American English, and they answered his queries about the States with good-natured patience. As a Jets fan, he was particularly interested in football. As a Frenchman, he was intrigued as well by Gamay and her unusual name. C'est belle, he said. C'est très belle. My father's idea, she explained. He was a wine connoisseur, and the color of my hair reminded him of the grape of Beaujolais. Bert's appreciative eyes took in Gamay's long, swept-up coif and her flashing smile. Your father was a lucky man to have such a lovely daughter. And you, Monsieur Trout, are fortunate to have a beautiful wife. Thank you, Paul said, putting his arm around Gamay's shoulder in an unmistakable male gesture that said, you can look, but don't touch. Bert smiled in understanding as the subtle message sunk in and again became the professional host. Are you here on business or for pleasure?
A bit of both, Gamay replied.
We own a small chain of wine shops in the Washington area, Paul explained, using the cover story he and Gamay had cooked up. He handed Bert one of the business cards he and Gamay had hastily printed up at an airport copy shop during their Paris stopover. As we travel about, we like to keep an eye out for small vineyards that might be able to offer something special for our discerning customers. Bert clapped his hands as if in light applause. You and your wife have come to the right place, Monsieur Trout. The wine you're drinking is from an estate not far from here. I can get you an introduction to the owner. Gamay took a sip from her glass. A robust red. Precocious and lively. It has high notes of raspberry. There's a hint of mischievousness to it that I like, Paul said, combined with low notes of pepper. Both Trouts tended toward microbrewery beer, and their knowledge of wine was gleaned mostly from the labels, but Bert nodded sagely. You are true wine aficionados. Thank you, Gamay said. Do you have any other vineyard suggestions?
Oui, Madame Trout. Many.
Bert jotted down several names on a napkin, which Paul tucked into his pocket.
Someone mentioned another vineyard, Gamay said. What was that name, dear?
Fauchard, Paul said.
That's it. She turned back to Bertrand.
Do you carry the Fauchard label?
Mon Dieu. I wish I did. It's a superb wine. Their production is very limited, and their wine is bought by a select group of wealthy people, mostly Europeans and rich Americans. Even if I could get it, the wine is much too expensive for my customers. We are talking $1,000 a bottle.
Really? Gamay said.
We'd love to visit the Fauchard estate and see what sort of grapes can fetch prices like that.
Bert hesitated, and a frown came to his handsome face.
It's not far from here, but the Fauchard are, how can I put it, odd.
In what way?
Not very friendly. Nobody sees them.
He spread his hands.
They are an old family, and there are stories.
What sort of stories?
Old wives' tales. Farmers can be superstitious. They say the Fauchard are sangsu, bloodsuckers.
You mean vampires? Gamay said with a smile.
Oui.
Bert laughed and said, I think they simply have so much money they are always afraid people will steal it. They are not typical of the people who live here. We are very friendly.
I hope the Fauchard don't give you the wrong impression.
That would be impossible after enjoying your fine food and hospitality, she said with a sly smile. Bert beamed with pleasure and, using another napkin, wrote down directions to the Fauchard estate. They could get a glimpse of the vineyards, he said, but the no trespassing signs will warn them when they get closer to the estate. They thanked him, exchanged hugs and cheek busses in the French manner, and got back in their car.
Gamay broke into laughter. A mischievous wine? I can't believe you said that.
I'd rather have a mischievous wine than a precocious vintage, Paul said with a haughty sniff.
You must admit it had high notes of raspberry, she said.
And low notes of pepper, too, Paul replied. I don't think Bert noticed our viticultural pretensions.
He was fixated on you.
You have a beautiful wife, Trout said in an accent like that of the old film star Charles Boyer.
I think he was quite charming, Gamay said with a pout.
So do I, and he was completely right about how lucky I am.
That's more like it, she said. She consulted the map Bert had drawn on the napkin. There's a turnoff that goes to the chateau about 10 miles from here.
Bert made it sound like Castle Dracula, Paul said.
From what Kurt told us, Madame Fauchard makes Dracula look like Mother Teresa.
20 minutes later, they were driving down a long dirt road that ran through rolling hills and neatly terraced vineyards. Unlike the other vineyards they had passed on the way, there were no signs identifying the owners of the grapevines. But as the surrounding countryside changed to woods, they began to see signs on the trees warning in French, English, and Spanish that they were on private property. The road ended at a gate in a high chain-link electrified fence topped with razor wire. The sign at the gate had an even sterner warning, again in 3 languages, saying that trespassers venturing further would encounter armed guards and watchdogs. The threat of bodily harm to unauthorized persons was unmistakable. Paul read the signs and said, "It appears that Bert was right about the Fauchards. They're not the warm and fuzzy type."
"Oh, I don't know," Gamay said. "If you look in your rearview mirror, you'll see that they sent someone out to greet us."
Paul did as Gamay suggested and saw the grille emblem of a black Mercedes SUV through the window of their rented Peugeot. The Mercedes blocked the road behind them. 2 men got out of the vehicle. One was short and stocky and had a shaved head shaped like a bullet. He held the leash of a fierce-looking Rottweiler who wheezed as he strained against his choke collar. The second man was tall and dark-complexioned and had the fleshy nose of a prize fighter. Both men wore military-style camouflage uniforms and sidearms. The bald man came over to the driver's side and spoke in French, which was not Paul's strong suit, but he had no problem understanding the order to get out of the car. Gamay, on the other hand, was fluent. When the bullet-headed man asked what they were doing there, she handed him a business card, produced the napkin Bert had given them, and showed them the vineyards listed on it. The man glanced at the names.
"This is the Fauchard estate. The place you want is that way," he said, pointing.
Gamay seemed to get agitated. She burst into a non-stop stream of French, gesturing frequently at Paul. The guard started laughing at the husbandly harangue. Bullethead gave Gamay a head-to-toe body sweep with his eyes that was more than casual. Gamay returned his unabashed interest with a coy smile. Then he, his companion, and the dog got back into the Mercedes. They moved the SUV out of the way so that Paul could back out. As the car drove off, Gamay gave the guards a wave that was eagerly returned.
"Looks like we met Kurt's skinhead friend Marcel," Paul said.
"He certainly fits the menacing description," Gamay said.
"He was a lot friendlier than I expected," Trout said. "You even had the dog smiling. What did you say?"
"I told them that you were an idiot for getting us lost."
"Oh," Trout said. "And what did Baldy say?"
"He said he would be glad to show me the way.
I think he was flirting with me."
Paul gave her a sidelong glance. "This is the second time you've used your feminine charms. First with Bert, then on Bullethead and his mutt.
All's fair in love and war."
"It's not the war I'm worried about. Every Frenchman we meet seems to have bedroom eyes."
"Oh, shush. I asked him if we could drive around and look at the grapes. He said that was all right, but to stay away from the fence."
Paul turned off at the first dirt road and they bumped along through acre after acre of vineyards. After a few minutes, they pulled over and got out of the car near a crew of grape pickers who were taking a cigarette break by the roadside. There were about a dozen dark-skinned workers talking to a man who seemed to be in charge. Gamay introduced themselves as American wine buyers. The man frowned when she explained that Marcel had given them permission to drive through the vineyards.
Oh, that one, the man said with a frown. He said his name was Guy Marchand, and he was the foreman of the work crew. They are guest workers from Senegal, he said. They work very hard, so I go easy on them. We stopped at the bistro and talked to Bertrand, Gamay said. He told us the wine produced here is wonderful. Oui, c'est vrai. Come, I'll show you the vines. He waved the grape pickers back to work and led the trouts down a line of vines. He was a voluble talker and enthusiastic about his work, and the trouts had no need to do their wine snob act. They had only to nod their heads as Guy went on about soil, climate, and grapes. He stopped at a vine trellis and plucked a few grapes, which he handed to Gamay and Paul. He squeezed the grapes, sniffed them, and tasted the juice with the tip of his tongue. They followed suit, clucking with admiration. They headed back to the road and saw that the workers were dumping grapes into the back of a truck. Where is the wine bottled? Paul said. On the estate itself, Guy said. Monsieur Emile wants to make sure every bottle is accounted for. Who is Monsieur Emile? Gamay said. Emile Fauchard is the owner of these vineyards. Do you think it would be possible to meet Monsieur Fauchard? Gamay said.
No, he keeps to himself.
So you never see him?
Oh, yes, we see him, Marchand said. He rolled his eyes and pointed toward the sky.
Both trouts looked up. I don't understand, Gamay said.
He flies over in his little red plane to keep watch.
Guy went on to explain that Emile personally dusted the crops. He told them that Emile had once dusted one of the work crews with pesticides. Some workers became violently ill and had to be transported to the hospital. They were all illegal immigrants, so didn't complain, but Marchand threatened to quit and the workers were given paltry gifts of money in compensation. He'd been told the dusting was an accident, although it was clear from the tone of his voice that he thought Emile had done it on purpose. But the Fauchards had paid him well, and he didn't complain. While Marchand talked, the workers finished loading the truck. Paul's eyes followed the truck as it trundled along the dirt road. After going about a quarter of a mile, it took a left-hand turn and headed toward a gate in the electrified fence. As a fisherman, Paul had developed a keen eye for detail, and he could see a couple of guards standing in front of the gate. He watched the truck slow down, then it was waved through, and the gate closed behind it. Paul tapped Gamay's shoulder and said, I think it's time to go. They thanked Marchand, got in their car, and headed back to the main road that would take them out of the vineyards. Interesting conversation, Gamay said. Emile sounds just as lovely as Kurt described him. Paul only grunted in return. Gamay was used to Paul's sometimes taciturn nature, a trait he had inherited from his New England forebears, but detected something deeper in his monosyllabic reply. Is there anything wrong? I'm fine. The story about the accidental dusting got me thinking again about all the misery Emile and his family have caused. They're responsible for the death of Dr. McLean and his scientific colleagues, and that Englishman Cavendish. Who knows how many more they've killed through the years? Gamay nodded. I can't get those poor mutants out of my mind. They've had to endure a living death. Paul whacked the steering wheel with the palm of his hand. It makes me want to punch someone in the nose. Gamay was surprised at the uncharacteristic outburst. She arched an eyebrow. We'll have to figure out a way to get past that fence and guards before we do any nose punching. That may be sooner than you think, Paul said with a smile, and he began to describe his plan.